some people who in past times would have been running around from appointments to errands, they suddenly find themselves with time at home, and some of them have decided the best use of that time is to bake bread. Making the good stuff takes precision and patience, and we're learning about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we're taking your tips and your questions about bread. There's a line for you right now at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Are you a beginning bread maker? What do you want to know about getting started successfully? Maybe you've baked bread for years, even decades. What's your secret? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Our guest is food writer Mark Bittman. He's the author of more than 20 books and former lead food writer for the New York Times Sunday Magazine. Mark, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Keely. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. So bread is having a moment, or at least it was. NPR reports that ingredient prices are down for things like flour and eggs, so maybe the craze is waning. Can you make the case for why we should still commit to bread baking?
You know, craze or no craze. and by the way, I went on Amazon Prime or Pantry this morning just to look, and price gouging for flour is still happening.
Okay.
So, look, I would never insist that everybody make their own bread, but I would point out that around 100 years ago, bread went bad when white flour became easy to make and bread became industrialized. Then if you want good bread, you either have to look hard for it and pay a lot of money for it or make it yourself. So, of course, there's the option of not eating bread at all. But if your option is bad packaged white bread or make it yourself, I think your choice is either make it yourself or don't bother.
So this would be the time that if I pick up bread at the gas station, you would be judging me.
I don't judge.
Sounds good. Well, I think we can make some strides forward in this hour. What is it about the act, the process of baking bread that seems to be rewarding, even therapeutic for some people?
Well, I think, you know, I would argue, I always have, that cooking itself has that quality. But bread, because it is slow paced, has a more, not to get carried away, a more meditative quality. And I bake bread several mornings a week, and I did that long before there was coronavirus. But the thing that I like about it is that it sets a rhythm for me, and it takes me out of whatever I'm doing every half hour or so for 4 or 5 hours. And I like that. I realize that's not convenient or even pleasant for everybody, but for those of us who maybe tend to be a little obsessive and can get into whatever we're doing to the exclusion of the world around us, it's nice to be reminded that there is a world around us periodically. So, I mean, different people find different reasons to enjoy baking, but for those of us who do, it's got a quality unlike anything else.
It takes real commitment in a way that baking other things or different cooking methods don't necessarily.
Well, it's certainly not, you know, baking is a very broad term, which includes everything from bread making to birthday cake or wedding cake making. So obviously there's a lot of different forms of baking, but bread baking is its own special thing. And when you get into sourdough, as I'm sure we will, you just have this kind of thread of continuity and this routine that you return to that, again, I don't think it's for everyone, but for those of us who enjoy it, it's really pleasant.
Mark Bittman is a food writer and the editor-in-chief at Heated, which is a food publication on Medium.com. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. We're focusing on bread baking this morning. What do you want to know about the process, about how to get it right? Once you've made your bread, do you just eat it as is? How do you serve it? How do you like to use it? And as Mark just mentioned, we'll go into sourdough. We'll take that on right now. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Mark, I don't know that I've seen the word sourdough as many times in my life as I have in this spring.
Right.
It is everywhere. What is going on here?
Well, you know, I don't really know. And here's what I do know. Everybody, commercial yeast wasn't invented until the late 19th century. It wasn't even really discovered until the mid 19th century. So that means that for the 10,000 years of agriculture that we know about, and bread was made before there was agriculture, but not much. It was all so-called sourdough. And all sourdough means is that you're capturing wild yeasts from the air and you're maintaining them in a starter. And the starter doesn't necessarily have to be sour, by the way, but it is acidic and it's a hospitable environment for those yeasts. And with a little bit of maintenance, and I really mean a little bit, you can maintain those yeasts and keep them happy. And what they will do in exchange for you keeping them happy is they will rise. They will make your flour rise and they will turn your flour and water combination into bread. And really the only three things you need for making bread are flour and water and yeast. And the most venerable form of yeast is not little red and yellow packages from Fleischmann's, but what we're calling sourdough now. And I'll say one more thing, just as a sort of introduction. I'm glad we have more time, but I'll say one more thing, which is that also until 100 years ago or so, most bread was whole grain and therefore good for you, the staff of life and so on. And if you want to make whole grain bread, and I would argue that you should, you kind of need sourdough because commercial yeast doesn't do a good job of producing, of giving you the kind of qualities you want in whole grain bread. And sourdough starter does a magnificent job of that. With not much practice or effort. I won't say there's no practice and no effort, but you know, in a couple of weeks or at most a month, you can become fairly skilled at making really good bread. And I think many people have found that during the period of quarantine and confinement.
I understand that to handle a sourdough starter, you have to feed it regularly. So that also includes taking some of it away. People throw away parts of sourdough starter. What do you want us to do with that? Is there something else instead of tossing it?
There is no toss. I mean, with a good method, there's no tossing.
Oh,
so
okay.
I don't quite understand the tossing thing. If you have excess starter, which I don't. I really don't get it, because the starter should be used to make bread. And if you're not using it to make bread, then why do you have it? So if you have excess starter, you can make waffles, you can make pancakes, you can make something, but that's not throwing it away. And there's no reason to have excess starter if you're using it. And your starter does pretty well if you feed it once a week. It likes to be fed more often, but it can be maintained at being fed once a week. And if you're not baking bread once a week, then again, what's the point of maintaining the starter? Go.
What's the point if you're not breaking bread once a week? I think in general is something we're hearing from Mark Bittenden, who's a food writer who stays with us for this hour. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We want to know, is there one part of bread baking that just trips you up every single time? What do you want to know about how to do that better? What questions do you have about baking bread? Maybe you have tried an unconventional approach and it's worked out or not. Share your story with us at 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. Our conversation here on The Morning Show continues. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and we're talking about baking bread this morning. There has been a bit of a resurgence in people trying their hand at this craft as some people spend more time at home and they're thinking through what they're doing, trying new things. And we're taking your calls. We've got food writer Mark Bittman, also editor-in-chief at Heated, and he was previously lead food writer for the New York Times Sunday Magazine. You can ask him your questions by calling 800-642-1234. There's a line for you right now. And Anne Marie from South Milwaukee wants to talk with us this morning. Hey, Anne Marie.
Hello. I am so excited about this conversation. I love making bread. And yes, I've got a lot of time after work now because all my activities have been canceled. So I've been doing a lot of it. And I'm really, what I want to do is start incorporating some of the whole grains themselves into the bread, and I know you started talking about that before the break, so like spelt berries, wheat berries. I don't know, how do I cook those first and then put them in, or how do I do that?
Oh, Anne Marie, I'm glad you're enjoying the bread baking, and let's find out. Mark, what do you think?
Well, that's a great question, and there's a couple different things you can do. One is you can use cracked grains, cracked wheat, cracked rye, cracked anything. And I would soak those overnight or for at least a few hours before adding them. You have to then take into account that you're increasing the amount of water that you're putting in the bread dough and account for that. But I would say 10, maybe 20% of the total volume of that is great. And the other thing is, yes, cooked grains are fine. Maybe in that case, up to 20, 25% of the total volume of cooked whole brown rice or wheat or rye, whatever. They should be pretty well cooked before you integrate them. They're not going to get much softer than they are when you add them.
Oh, that's interesting. So as you put them in, that is probably the texture you're going to have at the end of the baking process, even if you incorporate them into the dough and put them in the oven for that amount of time.
They'll get a little softer, but not much, yeah.
All right. Anne Marie, hope that suggestion helps a bit as you are taking on your various baking projects. You can call in at 800-642-1234, just like Anne Marie, as we talk about bread baking this morning. We got another note. Perry from Milwaukee couldn't stay with us, but wants to know how to get whole wheat flour to rise. Perry says he can't get it to rise like bleached flour. Is there a trick here, Mark Bittman?
Well, we talked about this, and the trick, it's not really a trick, but the reason sourdough is becoming popular, or has become popular, is because people have become a little more serious about their bread baking, and they're recognizing the value of whole grains. And the marriage between sourdough and whole grains is 10,000 years old. And sourdough enables you to cook, to bake better bread with whole grains than commercial yeast does. So if you want to make whole grain bread, you should be moving towards using a sourdough starter.
Interesting. So it's less about the flour and more about your rising agents.
Well, it is about the flour. If you're using white flour, you're fine with commercial yeast because that's a marriage made, I won't say in heaven, that's a marriage made by industry. But to make really good bread, you're talking about whole grains and sourdough starter. That is traditional bread, and that's the stuff that has supported humans for 10,000 years.
Well, let's talk more about yeast. I know the commercial yeast is not readily available when I have been just glancing at the grocery stores in my area. I have a cousin who bought an entire pound of it online and had it sent to her house. So if you are going with this method, can we quickly break it down? I mean, what is the yeast doing? Why is it almost always needed for the bread that we call bread?
If you want bread that's not flatbread, you need something that's going to create air bubbles in your bread. And you can use baking soda, you can use baking powder, or you can use yeast. Let's put baking quick breads, which is baking soda, baking powder bread, aside because they have a different quality entirely. and talk about yeast. You can, yeast, as I said, is captured by starter. Yeasts are captured by starters. And at some point in the 19th century, Louis Pasteur discovered this, what was going on behind all of this. And soon thereafter, yeast was commercialized and industrialized. So now there's basically two forms of yeast we can use. One is packaged yeast, and one is the yeast that's incorporated or that's found in sourdough starter. I can't get into the science of why sourdough is a far superior starter than packaged yeast, but it is. And whole grains are trickier to bake with than white flour. And part of that reason is they're more complex, and because they're more complex, they're more nutritious. But part of that complexity is the bran that's included in whole grains, whole wheat flour, and not in white flour. And that bran tends to counter the formation of gluten and tends to counter the formation of a kind of bread that's going to be pleasantly chewy with a great crust. So it takes a little more skill and a little more work, and it takes a better starter to make good bread with whole grains. And that better starter is sourdough. I realize this is complex, but it is. So the nature of it is. I could say, take my word for it, if you want to cook with whole wheat flour, you need sourdough starter, and leave it at that. Or I could say, take my word for it, sourdough is far superior to packaged yeast in every application that you want yeast. So that is the short version.
We're talking with Mark Bittman, who's a food writer and also the author of more than 20 books about food and cooking. And we're taking your questions about making bread this morning. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. What do you do with the bread that you bake? Maybe you haven't really dipped your toe into this kneading and combining of the ingredients and being patient. What do you think you need to know before you get started? Help us give you the confidence to take on the task of baking bread. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Mark, the other hallmark of bread is usually kneading. Is there a specific art to this? How do you make it happen?
Well, you know, I've been baking bread for a long time, but my sort of reputation as a bread maker began when I did a story with this guy named Jim Leahy about 15 years ago for the Times about no knead bread. And that has a sort of interesting backstory, which is that Jim called me and said, you know, I have this interesting technique where you can make bread without kneading it, and wonder if you'd like to cover that. And I, as I said, had been baking bread a long time, and this was interesting to me. And Jim and I worked on this, and it became astonishingly popular. It was probably the last time that people talked about bread as much as they're talking about it now. The short answer is you can make bread without kneading. What kneading is about is developing gluten. What gluten does is makes bread, let's say, strong. That is, a good crust and a nice chew. It enables the yeasts in the sourdough or the commercial yeast to do its work of strengthening and raising that flour-water combination. But you don't need to knead. Time will do the same thing. You do need to manipulate the dough somewhat, but it doesn't need to be this arduous process of 15 minutes of pounding and stretching. In fact, in many ways, that's counterproductive. So you don't see a lot of recipes anymore where the bread rises for an hour and then you knead it for 20 minutes and then it rises for a while and you put it in the oven. More frequently, you see recipes that gently allow the dough to rise for a long time, 10, 12 hours sometimes, but certainly two or three, with occasional folding or turning or stretching or very gentle kneading. So in a way, the process has evolved. Well, it's gone back to the way it was, but it's evolved to a place where instead of kneading, we spend more time treating the dough gently, encouraging the development of gas bubbles that will allow the bread to rise while we wait for the gluten to develop that will make the bread strong at the same time. We're looking for this funny combination of tender crumb that also has some pull to it, and then a very, very tough, crunchy crust. So there's a whole array of textures and flavors that we're looking for in bread, and the slow development encourages those flavors and encourages those textures, and then good baking technique finish, which is actually the easiest part, finishes the process off.
We're talking with Mark Bittman, who's a food writer and the editor-in-chief at Heated. He was previously lead food writer for the New York Times Sunday Magazine. And we're talking about baking bread this hour of the morning show. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about baking bread? Maybe you're really good at it. What's your secret? And how do you help other people learn this craft? 800-642-1234. There's a line for you there, or you can email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network. Combining the perfect ingredients, creating a dough that's the ideal consistency, kneading, having the awareness of time to let it rise the right number of minutes. Don't rush it, but don't wait too long either. And we haven't even gotten to the baking part of the bread making process. We're starting from scratch here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about baking bread this hour, and we want to hear from you. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about baking bread? What's the technique that you prefer to use? Is it pretty hands-off, or does it require a lot of attention? Tell us about it at 800-642-1234. We're talking with Mark Bittman, who's a food writer and the editor-in-chief at Heated, and he is also the author of the best-selling book, How to Cook Everything, if that jogs your memory a bit. And we're talking all about bread this hour. And Mark, you may not want to acknowledge this, but there are these things called bread machines, and some people choose to use those to make their bread. Okay, so tell us about them. I mean, is it okay? Is it good to make bread in a bread machine?
I mean, sure, it's fine, but you're not going to get the best bread you've ever eaten.
That was a pained answer.
Well, I mean, look, there's a spectrum of bread. There's a spectrum that starts on one end with Wonder Bread and ends on the other end with bread that's made from flour that you ground yourself and painstakingly made into a beautiful loaf. Somewhere on that spectrum is bread machine bread, excuse me, made at home. So it's better than Wonder Bread. It's not the best option you can find.
What's the biggest difference in the final product?
I mean, a lot of this is about what kind of flour you're using. Uh-huh. And as I said before, a lot of that is determined by whether you're using sourdough or commercial yeast. So you're not going to make sourdough bread in a bread machine. You're going to use commercial yeast. But if you use commercial yeast and whole wheat flour, for most people, that's an upgrade.
Mm-hmm. We've got Glenn from Port Washington who couldn't stay with us but wants to know about mixing starters and yeast. So maybe it could be used for any kind of bread. Is it possible to create a starter and yeast multi-use mix?
I don't see the point, really. There's a terrific way of making sourdough starter that begins with commercial yeast. So you make a batch of bread using commercial yeast, and you save a little bit of that and you nurse it to become sourdough starter. I don't see any reason to, once you have sourdough starter, there's no reason to use yeast. I suppose if it seems a little weak and you want to boost it, that would work, but I've never had that issue.
And when we've been talking about bread rising, you know, we've really been focused on what we're putting into it. Sometimes we can try our best, even with a sourdough starter, and things just don't quite work out. Sometimes the bread rises and sometimes it doesn't. I mean, what could go wrong here, Mark, when it comes to bread rising?
Sourdough can be, it can be temperamental. Sorry. It can be temperamental and it can be fickle. But usually once you have a stable sourdough and you have a pattern and you have some, you've built some good habits and you know what you're doing, there aren't problems. I personally haven't had a failure in probably 6 months, and I bake a lot. So, you know, and it's not that I am so great at it. I've just learned how to do it. In the early days, yes, there are failures, and they have to do with odd combinations of flours, or mostly they have to do with weak sourdough and not recognizing that your sourdough might need to be fed a day before you start baking with it because it's just not looking that great. You went away for a week, you forgot to feed it for a week, whatever. That's sort of the source of most problems for beginning bakers.
We're talking with Mark Bittman, who is editor-in-chief at Heated, also the author of more than 20 books about food and cooking. And we are coming up. It is the 20th anniversary of the book that he has written called How to Cook Everything. And we're talking this hour not necessarily about everything, but really about bread making. It's got a resurgence here as people are spending less time going around to different activities and more time at home. Maybe they have a chance to slow down and think about the bread that they want to make or try their hand at it for the first time. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Are you a beginning bread maker? What is a little bit intimidating about the process? Maybe you are a longtime baker and you've been doing things a certain way for a certain amount of time. What should we know about how you do it? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. Mark, you mentioned just briefly that the baking part may be the easiest part. How do we figure out the right pans or the right temperatures and how long to keep the bread in the oven? It doesn't feel that easy to me.
Well, that's called a recipe. And unless you want me to,
I hear you.
Unless you want me to read a recipe or recite a recipe right now, the answer is that the baking method that in French is called encloche, which basically means you bake in a covered pot for the first half or so of the baking, works brilliantly. And it works brilliantly because it keeps enough moisture in the bread, in the dough, so that it continues to rise in the oven. There's a thing called oven spring in which your dough miraculously almost doubles in volume while it's in the oven. And doing that in a covered pot is the best way to do that. And then you remove the cover and you let the crust harden and you get fabulous results. I think, rather than go into details of that, although I can if you want me to, rather than go into details of that, I would suggest that people Google me and bread or go out and buy How to Cook Everything or one of my other books, or go to the New York Times site and look at the old No Need Bread recipe, which I've updated a number of times, and all of that will work for detailed baking instructions. But baking is rarely the problem for people. Once you get the dough right, the baking really is pretty mechanical.
Where do people usually mess up then? Are we coming back to the starters or the yeast again, or is there someplace else where we trip up?
I think it is mostly... I'm in the process of coaching a number of beginners through making really good bread. And I think mostly the problem for people is the starter, making sure that the starter is really active. Another problem is judging water levels, because every every flower absorbs a different amount of water. And it takes a great deal of confidence to actually add enough water to the dough to make really good bread. So if the dough is a little dry, the bread's going to probably be disappointing. Yet when the dough is wet enough, it becomes a little tricky to handle and people become nervous.
Yeah.
So it takes a little experience to say, okay, this dough, in fact, I said to somebody the other day, you should add enough water so that your dough falls apart and then you know what the limit is and throw that out and then start again, which, you know, I was half kidding, but you almost want to add enough water to your dough for it to fall apart, but not quite that much. And that's the right amount of water. So learning what that is a matter of repetition, handling, observation, and so on. And like anything else, you just get better and better at it until it becomes intuitive.
We've got Wanda from Mount Horeb who wants to join the conversation we're having now with Mark Bittman. Good morning, Wanda.
Good morning. So I'm curious if he's made French bread. And then at Christmas time, it's a family tradition that I make a bread called rusk, which is a sweet bread.
All right. And what do you use in your rusk?
It's regular commercial yeast, and it's a sweeter bread. And with the rusk, what you do is you bake it as a bread, and then you slice it, and you toast it again in the oven so that you can dip it in your teas or hot chocolates.
Wanda, sounds great. Thanks for those questions. Wanda saying French bread and rusk, Mark Bittman.
Well, rusk, as Wanda's describing it, is familiar to most people as biscotti, sweet bread that's cooked twice. French bread is a little tricky. I mean, I'm not sure what Wanda means by French bread, but baguettes are a little tricky because the shaping is a challenge. And if your dough is as wet as it ought to be, then shaping is a real challenge. It's certainly surmountable. Again, it takes practice and a little bit of skill. But a French bread in boule form, that is ball form, is really, really fundamental and easy. It's in fact the easiest bread to make. So I'd recommend that people start with the ball shape. And when they gain confidence, move on to other sort of freeform shapes like baguettes.
All right. We're talking with Mark Bittman, who is a food writer and also editor-in-chief at Heated. And we are spending this hour on baking bread. So if you've got a question about it, Mark can probably answer it. He's the author of more than 20 books about food and cooking and baking, and was also previously the lead food writer for the New York Times Sunday Magazine. The lines are open for you at 800-642-1234. Tell us about your process or ask your question about getting started if you've been thinking a long time about baking bread and have just decided to go for it. What do you want to know before you finally take the plunge? 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. We've got just enough time for your call and your story ahead. You're listening to The Morning Show right here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. I've seen more beautiful bread in the last few months than I don't know when. From the golden crust of some to real art in the form of herbs and tomatoes and olives and onions, baking bread is a craft. Our guest is Mark Bittman. He's a food writer and editor-in-chief at Heated, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Still time for us to tell, or for you to tell us how you bake your bread. What questions do you have about it? And maybe you have something you're wondering about how it could improve. Now is the time, 800-642-1234. Mark, what about the rise of people following celiac or grain-free diets? Are there grains that they can use when trying to create tasty bread?
I mean, there is gluten-free bread, but a very small percent of the population has celiac, and those people do need to avoid wheat and other grains with gluten. But for most people, wheat is a great option, and the problem is not wheat itself, but white flour. So I kind of want to shortcut that discussion because the celiac population of the United States is so small that we wouldn't be talking to a lot of the audience.
Sure. But I mean, so much of bread relies on these grains that are so, you know, so important. And for some people, they might not need to, but they have chosen to go that other route. And it sounds like if that's the route they're going, there are other options that, that they should look into. You're a traditionalist here.
Well, there is gluten-free flour. Sure. It doesn't behave the same as wheat flour or rye flour, and it's mm-hmm. perfectly fine thing to bake with, but you're not going to get traditional bread out of it.
All right. We're talking with Mark Bittman right now, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. And we've got Erica in Oconomowoc ready to talk with us. Hi, Erica.
Hi. My favorite subject, bread. I have a question for you. What about using the Instapot for the first proofing? I discovered a recipe online for Instapot French bread the other day, and I used the Instapot on the yogurt setting for 40 minutes and smushed the bread every 10 minutes during that process, and it came out beautifully.
I have not done that. Sounds fine to me. In a way, it sounds like you're complicating matters rather than simplifying them. But, the bread making process happens faster if the temperature is warmer. And having a controlled temperature environment of 100 degrees, or which is probably what that yogurt setting is, will make things happen more quickly. So if you want to move things along, that sounds fine to me. Other people let their bread proof in an oven with the oven light on, which is usually a warmer than room temperature. But again, I think most people who've baked a lot of bread allow for different differences in room temperature, recognize that things happen a little more quickly in summer than in winter, and enjoy the pace that happens at room temperature.
All right. Erica, so glad it worked out for you. It sounds like that might be something that you incorporate into your routine if it works. But Mark Bittman also saying not necessary all of the time. So good information there. We're talking with food journalist Mark Bittman, who has written a bunch of books and also was former lead writer for the New York Times Sunday Magazine. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234, all about bread. And Ed from McFarland is on the line now. Hi, Ed.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. So my question is, the same question applies to bread, but most recently, making pizza crust. We have the same exact recipe in terms of ingredients, but it seems like the amount of kneading that you do, the initial kneading and working in the flour with the water, affects it. And what can you say about that? How much kneading you do in that initial knead? And I guess even at the end, when you're forming the loaf or you're forming the crust, does the kneading and the handling affect the outcome?
Thanks for that question, Ed. Mark, yeah, overworking it sometimes.
Pizza crust is notoriously challenging. Making decent pizza is really easy. Making spectacular pizza is really hard. And there's the differences between them are subtle and many. So I tend to make pizza dough much drier than bread dough. I use less water. I put some olive oil in there, which makes it a little more supple. But the whole process of rolling it out or stretching it, the final process, is really tricky because, in my experience, you have to allow the dough to rest occasionally. So you flatten it, You let it rest for a few minutes. You flatten it again. You let it rest a little more. If it's really resistant, you have to let the gluten relax before you can get it thin enough to bake. So there's a lot that goes into it, from the initial addition of water to how much you work it and to how you treat it at the end. And, you know, without seeing your original recipe, I can't comment on what you're doing right or what you might not be doing right. I just know what works using my recipe.
Sure. Mark Bittman, I don't know about this, but I hear that sometimes when people bake bread, they do not eat all of it right away, so they have to figure out how to store it. I'm not sure how they resist, but it happens. What is the best way to handle it if you've made a bunch of bread, but you know that you can't eat through it right away?
Well, you know, I don't want to sound like a preacher, although I realize to some extent I do, but whole grain bread keeps for days. And it keeps for days with no wrapper. I mean, you can wrap it in a towel, but I don't even do that anymore. And the third day, the fourth day, it's almost as good as the first day. So most people will finish a loaf in that amount of time. The amount that's left can be made into breadcrumbs, can be made into bread pudding, can be reincorporated into your next bread, cut up, soaked in water, and used as part of your next dough. White bread goes stale fast. It's got very little fat in it, sometimes none, to keep it going. And in that case, if you're making white bread or using white bread and it does go stale, French toast is the first option. Bread pudding is the second option. Breadcrumbs are the third option.
In our last few minutes here together, Mark, what's your favorite bread to bake and why is that?
Well, I'm making not many variations on this pretty much 100% whole wheat, stone ground. I grind it myself, flour. And I was thinking about it this morning because I'm just not getting tired of this and the varieties of different berries that I'm using and the occasional variation of seeds or addition of a little rye, sometimes walnuts and raisins or something like that. That's what I'm doing. And I'm doing it with the same starter that I've had for, I don't know, a year or two. And as I said, different varieties of wheat that I'm experimenting with, but I am not getting tired of it. And I've got at the moment, 5 people living with me who are enjoying it and eating it and thriving on it. I as I said at the top of the hour, I feel like I found a rhythm in this and I'm really enjoying it and it's become part of my life.
Mark Bittman, thank you so much for your time this morning.
It's been a pleasure, Keely. Thank you for having me.
Mark Bittman is a food writer and the editor-in-chief at Heated, which is a food publication on Medium.com. He's the author of more than 20 books about food and cooking, also previously the lead food writer for the New York Times Sunday Magazine. And he's actually doing a virtual lunch for libraries with the Madison Public Library today. It happens at noon. It's a fundraiser, and the cost of a ticket does come with a copy of Mark's book, How to Eat. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.